Casual Fridays. Glad you're with us today. And we've got all the injury updates you need in week 13. Also, the importance of that top seed in the NFC. We're going to be talking about who might get that top seed with all these people right here. You got Mina Kimes, Marcus Spears, Ryan Clark. What's up, guys? They're going to answer all the tough questions because that's what we do on NFL Live. And let's give you some game picks as well. That's coming your way, including Browns, Titans, and Rams, Cardinals. Fingers crossed our overall show record improves. Mina, first of all, give me a matchup to watch Sunday.
Well, in the Giants-Seahawks game, we hear a lot about DK Metcalf, deservedly so, but I got my eye on the cornerback who's defending him, James Bradbury, because he has quietly put together the best season of his career. Has been an incredible free agent pickup for New York. He's got his work cut out for him this weekend, but if the Giants want any chance in this, he needs to shut down Metcalf.
Can the Atlanta Falcons do anything to slow down Hendrickson and Cam Jordan when they play the New Orleans Saints? They absolutely wrecked the game the last time these two teams met, and they are actually calling Matt Ryan Cam Jordan's best friend in Louisiana on the news. And so if you want to win this game, Atlanta Falcons, you better protect your quarterback.
Listen, first of all, at some point we're going to talk about these damn teams and their running backs. But right now, I'm talking about Jeffrey Simmons. Look, he is people sleeping on him, one of the better run defenders in the NFL going up against one of the better rushing teams in the NFL. I cannot wait to see this battle in the trenches with number 98, Jeffrey Simmons, against the Cleveland Browns.
Swaggo, you talked about those running backs. Maybe the most intriguing game of the weekend, Browns versus Titans. Couple really similar teams, some absolute powerhouse backs, though. And King Henry will stiff arm you in a heartbeat, so watch out. Nick Chubb, essential as a piece in this Browns offense and really part of their offensive identity. One of these teams, by the way, going to be 9-3 after Sunday. So rushing attack will be the focal point. And since the start of last season, Derrick Henry and Nick Chubb ranked first and second in the league rush yards per game, 100-yard rushing games, yards after contact per rush, and yards above expectation per NFL Next Gen stats. Henry has the edge in most categories, but no one's been tougher to bring down than Chubb. Both defenses gonna have their hands full on Sunday. Ryan, is Nick Chubb underappreciated in your mind?
Hell yeah, he's underappreciated. I mean, we forget how good this dude is. And because he missed some weeks here in the middle of the season, we acting like he ain't that boy. Listen, when Nick Chubb plays for the Cleveland Browns, they are two different teams, two different offenses. He goes out, they're number one in rushing. They fall to the latter 20s when he's on the bench or when he's on the pine or when he's in rehab. Nick Chubb runs over folks, he runs around folks, and he changes the physicality of the Cleveland Browns offense. And so when we watch this game, yes, we will marvel at Derrick Henry. We understand how big he is, how fast, how explosive. But the dude on the other side is a war daddy, too. It's going to be about these two dudes, and I can't wait to watch them run the football.
Ryan, you're absolutely right. Like, Chubb and Henry are 1 and 2 in every category in rushing, no matter how you slice it. They're like Federer and Nadal. If Federer and Nadal were extremely jacked and ran dudes over... We talk a lot about how great Derrick Henry is in the fourth quarter, right? Like, he goes nuts at the end of games. But Nick Chubb in the fourth quarter against stacked boxes is rushing 12.5 yards per carry. That is not a typo. 12.5 yards per carry. I will disagree with you, though. I think the run games are so good that they almost cancel each other out. And when I look at this game and try to evaluate what's going to be the difference, to me, it's the quarterback. Whichever quarterback doesn't turn the ball over, Ryan Tannehill has played better football than Baker Mayfield, but Myles Garrett is on the field. I think that's going to be the key matchup in this game, that Browns pass rush against Ryan Tannehill, because whoever makes a mistake is going to lose it for their team.
This game, extremely difficult to pick. Our game picks coming your way momentarily. But, Marcus, how big is this game for the Browns?
It's huge. Listen, in the words of my man Inky Johnson, one of the better motivational speakers, and Eric the Hip Hop Preacher, who the hell are you, Cleveland Browns? Are you the team that can stand up when you're playing somebody that's legitimately in contention to make a Super Bowl run, a playoff run? There's been two outings this year, y'all, between Baltimore and the Pittsburgh Steelers where the Cleveland Browns look like they shouldn't have even been on the field. And they got a substantial win against the Colts. Everybody else? They done beat or bad? They suck. They terrible. So Cleveland has to find out who they are when they're playing against a team that potentially has the same type of expectations that they have going forward throughout this season. I'm waiting to see it. Listen, Baker Mayfield, Ryan Tannehill, we can spit names out. We can talk Derrick Henry, Chubb, Kareem Hunt. We can talk about all of these guys. What it boils down to for me is the Cleveland Browns for real, or are they feasting on lesser than opponents? Period. That's all I want to know. I'm going to keep preaching it, and maybe after this week I'll change my tune. But for right now,
with
the Cleveland Browns,
if
you look at their schedule, hadn't beaten anybody worth a grain of salt outside of the Baltimore, outside of the Colts.
Yeah, period with a T and a D. Anyway, whatever. So,
period.
Ryan, period. Ryan, when you think about it along those lines, I mean, I said this off the top, one of these teams is going to be 9-3 after this game. Is anybody fearing these teams in the playoffs, the Browns or the Titans?
You know what? I hate to use the word fear because these are all grown men who love this game, but yeah. You get scared when you go against the Tennessee Titans because of the type of game that they play. And listen, guys, let's not forget, this was the type of football Tennessee played that got them to the AFC Championship last year. And one of those teams was the New England Patriots. Tom Brady, greatest of all time. They beat them in New England. Then you play the Baltimore Ravens, who we had seen go through the regular season and run roughshod over team. We thought that they would be in the AFC Championship, no doubt. They go to Baltimore and beat them. And obviously, when you play Patrick Mahomes, hey, man, sometimes people leave the hospital with more than you got. And Patrick Mahomes left the hospital with a full cart of that whip butt. And so that's a different thing. But when you watch the Tennessee Titans, the one thing they don't do is get out of character. You know how it gets, man. You start pressing people. Yeah. You start messing with them. Yeah. They get out of character. And they act like they mama ain't raised them right. The Tennessee Titans don't do that. You get up, guess what? They turn around and hand the ball to Derrick Henry. You score another touchdown, guess what they do? Turn around and hand the ball to Derrick Henry. And eventually in the fourth quarter, you're looking at Marcus Spears on the bench, and I'm the free safety, and I'm saying, say, bro, if y'all don't stop him at some point, I'm just going to stop hitting him. Because clearly, this ain't my job. But that's what happens. Can the Cleveland Browns get there? If the Cleveland Browns could get there and say, you know what? Nick Chubb, no matter if we're losing or not, we're going to keep giving you this football and not put it on Baker. If they get there, I think you start to fear them a little bit too.
Mina, really fast, I just want to clear something up. Did Ryan Clark say a full cart of whip butt?
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to JetsPizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. What if in 2024 you got a little bit better every day? When you're learning a new language with Babbel, that's exactly what you're doing. And if Babbel can help you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, imagine what you could do in a full year. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Try Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. They have over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/tackle. Get 60% off at babbel.com/tackle. Spelled BABBEL.com/tackle. Rules and restrictions may apply.
I think so. Yes. Yeah, that's a technical football term for those at home who are confused. You might
is.
You know, it's a sophisticated show. We use advanced terminology.
Because he got more than a can. That's why.
That's exactly
it. He got bags and bags of it.
Hey, yes, he did. And listen, we're going to pick this game right now and show you what we're working with. In fact, we're all working with the same thing. So we're all going with the Titans. And Mina's saying no because every time we do this on this show, the team that we all pick loses. So if you're interested in this game, you might want to pick the Browns. I know, it's very scary.
That's not true.
What can we do about it? We don't talk about our picks. It's so bad. It's V-Week here at ESPN, making many of us think of the great Stuart Scott. As Stuart fought cancer so bravely, he was also a champion for cancer research and driven to improve the fight for African Americans. Here's his ESPY speech, given just days after a rough stay in the hospital.
Every day I am reminded that our life's journey is really about the people who touch us. When I first heard that I was going to be honored with this reward, the very first thing that I did was I was speechless, briefly. I've presented this award before. I mean, I've watched in awe as Kay Yao and Eric LeGrand and all these other great people grace this stage. And although intellectually I get it, I'm a public figure, I have a public job, I'm battling cancer, hopefully I'm inspiring. At my gut level, I really didn't think that I belong with those great people. But I listened to what Jim Valvano said 21 years ago, the most poignant seven words ever uttered in any speech anywhere. Don't give up. Don't ever give up. Those great people didn't. Coach Valvano didn't. So to be honored with this, I now have a responsibility to also not ever give up. I'm not special. I just listened to what the man said. I listened to all that he said, everything that he asked of us, and that's to build the V Foundation. And let me tell you, man, it works. I'm talking tangible benefits. You saw me in that clinical trial. Now, here's the thing about that. Coach Valvano's words 21 years ago, helping me and thousands of people like me right now, direct benefits. That's why all of this, why we're here tonight, that's why it's so important. I also realized something else recently. You heard me kind of allude to it in the piece. I said, I'm not losing. I'm still here. I'm fighting. I'm not losing. But I got to amend that. When you die, that does not mean that you lose to cancer. You beat cancer by how you live, why you live, and in the manner in which you live. So live, live, fight like hell. And when you get too tired to fight, then lay down and rest and let somebody else fight for you. That's also very, very important. I can't do this don't give up thing all by myself. I got thousands of people on Twitter and on the streets who encourage me. I got these amazingly wonderful people at ESPN. I got corporate executives, my bosses, this is true, who will text message me. And they'll say, hey, heard you had chemotherapy today. You want me to stop by on the way home from work and pick you up something to eat and bring it to you? Seriously? Who does that? Whose boss does that? My bosses do that. But even with all that, the fight is still much more difficult than I even realized. What you didn't see in the piece is what's gone on probably the last 10 days. I just got out of the hospital this past Friday. 7-day stay. Man, I crashed. I had liver complications. I had kidney failure. I had 4 surgeries in a span of 7 days. I had tubes and wires running in and out of every part of my body. And guys, when I say every part of my body, every part of my body. As of Sunday, I didn't even know if I'd make it here. I couldn't fight. But doctors and nurses could. The people that I love, my friends and family, they could fight. My girlfriend, who slept on a very uncomfortable hospital cot by my side every night, she could fight. The people that I love did last week what they always do. They visited, they talked to me, they listened to me, they sat silent sometimes, They loved me. And that's another one of the components of the V Foundation. This whole fight, this journey thing is not a solo venture. This is something that requires support. I called my big sister Susan a few days ago. Why? I needed to cry. It was that simple. And I know that I can call her. I can call my other sister Cynthia, my brother Stephen, my mom and dad, and I can just cry. And those things are very important. I have one more necessity. Yeah, it's really two. Two very vibrant, intelligent, beautiful young ladies. The best thing I have ever done, the best thing I will ever do, is be a dad to Taylor and Sydney. It's true. I can't ever give up because I can't leave my daughters. Yes, sometimes I embarrass them. Sometimes they think I'm a tyrant. That's a direct quote. There is an adjective that describes tyrant too, but I'm not going to go there. But Taylor and Sydney, I love you guys more than I will ever be able to express. You two are my heartbeat. I am standing on this stage here tonight because of you. My oldest daughter, Taylor, I wanted her to be here, but college sophomore, summer school, second semester, starting this week. Baby girl, I love you, but you go do you. You go do that. My littlest angel is here.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
My 14-year-old. Sydney, come up here and give Dad a hug because I need one. I want to say thank you, ESPN. Thank you, ESPYs. Thank all of you. Have a great rest of your night and have a great rest of your life.
You can honor Stuart Scott's memory by giving to his research fund. The fund supports minority researchers and the research of why some cancers are more likely to impact minority populations. If you're able, give now at v.org/Stuart. Back on NFL Live and some really interesting games in the NFC this weekend. Seahawks looking to stay undefeated at home with the Giants traveling out west. Seattle remains the only team in the NFC unbeaten at home this season. Meanwhile, Aaron Rodgers and the Packers hosting the Eagles. Rodgers has been dominant against teams with losing records this season, throwing 15 touchdowns to just one interception. And the Saints look to improve to 8-0 without Drew Brees since the start of last season when they faced the Falcons this Sunday. The defense has been the difference maker in those games, allowing just under 15 points per game in Brees' absence. So New Orleans currently sits in first place in the NFC. ESPN's Football Power Index gives the Saints a 50% chance to hold on to that spot. Remember, with this year's new playoff format, only the top seed in each conference receives a bye in the postseason, making it more important than ever to have that top spot. So, Ryan, you know, it's one of those weeks where it's like, could we see some upsets? Could we see some teams maybe come out a little slow? Which team is most likely to lose on Sunday?
See, first off, I don't know why y'all put it most likely to lose. I'm not saying it's the most likely to lose, but if I was asked to pick one, it would be the New Orleans Saints. And not because I didn't just watch them stump out the Atlanta Falcons 2 weeks ago, which was absolutely ridiculous. It's because I said last week, we're going to see what Taysom Hill looks like as it moves forward in the season, as teams start to get a little film on him. And when I watched that game last week, and I heard so many people talk about they couldn't watch the game because of the Denver Broncos quarterback situation. Well, the quarterback situation on the other side wasn't that much better. One team seemed to be playing a practice squad wide receiver, and the other team seemed to be playing a utility football player. And so what is it going to be like offensively for the New Orleans Saints this week now that the Atlanta Falcons have their second go-around at Taysom Hill?
So I want to remind you what Ryan Clark said 2 weeks ago when these teams played and the Saints upset them. Ryan, you said that Taysom Hill catfished Atlanta. So let me break down what that means. Atlanta, the defense, they swiped right on a quarterback who was going to be a designed runner. The guy who showed up at the restaurant was throwing play-action passes. So you're right. They were catfished, okay? Now they know it's going to be one of those two things. Either we're going to get a lot of design runs like we saw last week. Taysom Hill didn't play well last week. Or that play-action passing game to Michael Thomas. Either way, this Falcons defense, which has been playing better lately, they'll at least be prepared for it. Now, I'm still picking the Saints because of their defense, but I agree with you. If I had to pick an upset out of these three, I would go with the Falcons as well.
Yeah, I'm so glad that I don't have to date in 2020 because all this swipe right and swipe left, like, I'd probably be swiping the wrong way. Anyway, Marcus, who do you trust the most in the NFC to get that number one seed? We talked about how important it is. Who's going to be the one seed in the NFC?
I mean, listen, if you were single, Els, I couldn't imagine them DMs on a daily basis. But listen, this is about the Saints. It'd be heat. A phone be on fire.
Come on,
blue
y'all.
Listen, man, this is about.
You're just trying to get more time on this show, trying to give me love. It doesn't work, okay? We're sticking to the script here. Actually, there is no script.
It's the truth. It's the truth. Listen, this is a part of the conversation as far as the season goes along as well, as we try to get back to some serious football talk. The Saints, to me, have become whole, right? We talked about NFC teams. We talked about defenses that weren't playing successfully, and the Saints was right in there. Me and Ryan earlier this year talked about this defense was supposed to be one of the top defenses in the league. Well, the last few weeks, they've shown to be that. Especially up front with the emergence of Hendrickson, getting Davenport back was a big deal, Mina talked about. And then Cam Jordan now finally starting to assert himself as the guy that we know. This defense for the Saints is the reason the confidence meter has risen to a high level. Because look, to be honest, there's a lot of really good offensive teams in the NFL right now. There's a lot of people that we feel comfortable can put points on the board. So now as we start to get closer and closer to one and done in the playoffs, you got to start identifying other parts of teams to understand where they have the potential to go. And if the Saints defense continues to ascend and play the way that they've been playing, there's no reason to believe that the Saints can't end up in the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I hear what you're saying, Marcus, but to me, I don't think they get the number one seed. When you look at the schedule of the Seattle Seahawks, they have the NFC East, and then they hit the Rams later on in the season. And I think having the Rams at home, getting an opportunity to see them again and what they were able to do in the second half defensively against Jared Goff and that offense, I think they have a great chance at winning that game. If you're the New Orleans Saints, while you have Taysom Hill, you have to see Atlanta again. You will see Kansas City down the road. You'll see the Minnesota Vikings. I just think they have a tougher schedule. They have some games that they can lose. And I do think that getting that bye is important for the Saints. And what type of Drew Brees are we getting? We already have a Drew Brees that takes everything he has to get behind the football and be able to throw it. Will he come back healthy? And so I believe the Seattle Seahawks, with that defense improving, with the run game getting healthy again, and obviously with Russell Wilson, one of the top quarterbacks in this game, I believe they have the inside track to the number one overall seed. And Mina's not going to want to say this because she's not going to want to jinx it, but she believes it and knows it too.
Don't make her jinx it. Mina, what do you think? Who's the number one seed in the NFC?
Well, I swear I'm not trying to not be a homer. I still think it's the Saints. I will say Ryan's right. The Seahawks do have an easy schedule, and after the next few weeks, everyone's going to say, oh, the Seahawks defense is fixed. This is why you need to look at schedule always, because they're about to play a very easy slate of they got Colt McCoy this weekend, so you got to really consider the competition early on. I think the Saints are the most complete team.
Marcus, really fast.
Els, Mina don't even want to look at us when she's talking about
can't.
The Seahawks.
She's like, I'm not even making eye contact with you people. Time here now to make the case for Defensive Player of the Year. It looks like it could be a two-man race. T.J. Watt has been nothing short of sensational, leading the league in both pass rush win rate and sacks this season. But don't count out Aaron Donald, who ranks second in both pressures and sacks this season, despite being double-teamed on 67% of his pass rush snaps. For comparison's sake, Watt is being double-teamed on 14% of his pass rush snaps, clearly both playing at an unbelievable level. So Ryan Clark tweeted this yesterday, TJ Watt, Defensive Player of the Year? I'd say so. Mina responding with an Aaron Donald gif. So that brings us here with these two. Mina, I'll let you go first. Make your case for Aaron Donald for Defensive Player of the Year.
All right. Your Honor, Marcus Spears, the members of the jury watching NFL Live today, my opposing counsel, Ryan Clark, attorney at law, he's going to argue that his fellow Steeler, TJ Watt, bias, deserves the award based on normie stats like sacks and pressures, despite the fact that, as you just saw, my client, Aaron Charles Donald, is the actual best player who gets double, say, triple teamed at nearly twice the rate at TJ Watt, and has accomplished just as much even though he plays on the inside. The point of Defensive Player of the Year is not to give it to a new player every year or the flavor of the month. It's to choose the actual best player. And I believe Aaron Donald should be rewarded for his extremely buff body of work. If you ask any general manager in the league right now, who is the player you would build your defense around, 99 out of 100, I realize there aren't 100 general managers, would absolutely say Aaron Donald. It's a no-brainer to me. He's not only the best player in football this season, he's the best defensive player in a generation.
Extremely buff body of work. We're going to let Ryan make his case. And once again, Marcus Spears will be the judge on this. Ryan, who's the Defensive Player of the Year?
Picture this. You arrive at your hotel. You have an important online meeting lined up with clients from all across the country. You have your laptop open, ready to begin. And the Wi-Fi is so terrible, you can't even connect. These types of stressful situations happen all the time, but they don't have to. When you book a room at La Quinta by Wyndham, you have access to their free high-speed Wi-Fi, so you can take care of those critical emails, join your meetings on time, and even unwind by streaming your favorite shows without having to worry. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
Your Honor, as my opposing counsel has mentioned, Aaron Donald is many of those things, and I'm not here to disprove what Aaron Donald is. I agree with those things. I'm just here to prove what TJ Watt is. What TJ Watt is, a guy who was in this same conversation last year, should have been with Chandler Jones and Aaron Donald and the eventual winner, Stephon Gilmore. He's a guy who is first in sacks, a guy who is first in pressure, a guy who is first in win rate. And listen, it's not about the problems you have to overcome. It's about how many times you overcome them, how many times you show up. And TJ Watt has actually shown up more than Aaron Donald this year. And I know that Aaron Donald is the best player. And if it was, we're going to give it to the best player every year award, Michael Jordan would have had 10 MVPs. LeBron James would now have about 14. That's not the way it works. This year, TJ Watt plays on a better defense. TJ Watt is more influential in not only the run game, the pass game, as in rushing the passer, but also in defending the pass. And so, though Aaron Donald, yes, a generational talent, and yes, Aaron Donald, the best football player on earth, because I don't even count it when you say not quarterback. He's not the Defensive Player of the Year award. Aaron Donald is competing against Aaron Donald, and we all know that. But this year, the award belongs to TJ Watt. I rest my case.
You two take a bow. Let's bring in Judge Swagoo to really figure this one out. That's what he looks like, the Judge Swagoo. Let's get to Marcus Spears. He's ready to match. Listen, guys, he might be at the barber shop. I'm not sure. But Judge Swagoo, who is the Defensive Player of the Year who won this battle and made the best case?
Well, I like both arguments. Judges are not supposed to laugh.
It's a curtain.
It is a
He's
curtain.
He's getting a haircut. Really is a curtain, guys.
Y'all, let me be. Let me prick the person that won the damn argument, okay? Listen, I like both arguments.
I like both premises. You won the argument.
I like what both of you guys. I like what both of you all went. But, Ryan, you got to understand, man, I'm a former D lineman. I know the dirty work that Aaron Donald has had to do over his career, and he still continues to give his best effort. The point is, he's got better numbers now than T.J. Watt. And T.J. Watt has benefited from the fact that he plays on a defense that has been historically good. Now, with my Harley Quinn gavel, I'm going to end this case by saying, Mina Kimes wins.
Yes!
Guess what? You know what?
Guys,
here's what happens, though. Mm-hmm. You guys discriminate against me because I'm not on the show Monday through Thursday. Mina can't even let me live on Twitter. She take a shot every Friday. I just send out a regular tweet. I just want to talk to the regular people. And then Mina comes. And then Harley Quinn Judge with the curtain on takes Mina's side. This is it. This is my last Friday. I'm done. I'm a wrap.
As the bailiff in this whole thing, I demand that Marcus wears that outfit for the rest of the show. Outfit as in curtains. And keeps the gavel handy. Because you never know. We might need it later. Okay, let's carry on here because we've got to get to some more stuff. Here's a look at this week's DraftKings $1 million winning lineup. No surprise to see Derrick Henry and Tyreek Hill on that list of players given their performances. So now time for DraftKings plays of the day. Field Yates joining us for that. And who are some of the best options in daily fantasy this week, Field?
Yeah, $1 million would go a long way, Laura, to upgrading Marcus's wardrobe, but I probably shouldn't poke the bear. He's a lot bigger than I am, but I digress. The quarterback that I've got my eyes on this week is Kirk Cousins in a great matchup against the Jaguars, who are already sort of talent short in the secondary. You multiply that by all of their injuries. As we saw last week with the Cleveland Browns, they had their way in the passing game. I suspect Kirk Cousins will be able to do whatever he wants with, of course, both Adam Thielen and Justin Jefferson available this Sunday. And at running back, David Montgomery is a player that is never going to be super highly priced in daily fantasy because he's been inconsistent, not a high ceiling player, except for this week against the Detroit Lions, a bottom five run defense. And this much we know about David Montgomery. He's not going to be as explosive as guys like Alvin Kamara or Derrick Henry, but the volume is going to be there, not just as a runner, but also as a receiver. And then the key in daily fantasy, Laura, is to every once in a while differentiate from the crowd. You can't have the same lineup, the chalk lineup, that everybody else is talking about, which is why I've got my eyes on Henry Ruggs III this week for the Raiders. They play the Jets, who are incredibly bereft of talent in the secondary right now. Nelson Aguilar, a bit banged up for the Raiders. He'll play on Sunday, but I do think Henry Ruggs could have a shot or two at a big play that could make it a worthwhile daily play.
Yeah, so I'm hoping that all of you out there win $1 million with DraftKings in Daily Fantasy. Of course, the official partner for Daily Fantasy of the NFL. Thanks so much, Field Yates, for being with us. Field Yates back with us now for the injury report. We need to know everything you should know about injuries heading into week 13. Field, what's the latest on Josh Jacobs?
Yeah, let's start there, Laura, as Josh Jacobs is out on Sunday against the Jets. Didn't practice at all this week. Really wasn't much hope that he would return after suffering an ankle injury late last week in that loss to the Falcons. Expect plenty of Devontae Booker this weekend. Jalen Richard, also a useful part of that Raiders backfield. So no Josh Jacobs on Sunday. Moving forward here. And who do we got next? Moving forward here with the next injury, we've got Dalvin Cook, who is officially playing on Sunday here, Laura. He is off the injury report. He got banged up a little bit last week in that game for the Vikings. Didn't have his best total effort, but he should be good to go on Sunday without any restrictions whatsoever. Daniel Jones for the Giants, now officially doubtful to play because of a hamstring injury. This happened, of course, as we know, last week against the Bengals. Should see more of Colt McCoy as the starter on Sunday. And for the Giants, you got to be cautious here with Daniel Jones. Three straight solid performances for him for the most part during that three-game winning streak for the Giants. And then finally, Tua Tagovailoa is officially questionable to play on Sunday for the Dolphins. This team feels very comfortable, as we know, with Ryan Fitzpatrick. It's a thumb injury for Tua. Brian Flores, our head coach, said they're going to figure out their decision this afternoon, but won't tell any of us. I think we know that if the call is close, they feel very comfortable going back to Fitz for another week in a game they should win against the Bengals, which would push their record almost incredibly to 8-4 on the season.
Yeah, thanks so much, Field. This Dolphin situation is fascinating, especially, too, when you consider that their schedule is about to get a lot more difficult after this game this week against the Bengals. But, Marcus, why is Tua sort of built to handle this type of situation in quarterback room?
Yeah, L Boogie, you and I covered Tua while he was at Alabama, and we kind of have a real good understanding of his makeup, you even more so because you reported on him for so long. But to think of a young player in this situation to get a job, be pulled, and then Fitzpatrick reinserted as the starting quarterback, sometimes that could derail your train of thought. It can make you question about who you are as a football player. And I just feel like in Tua's case, that's not what the situation is going to be. If you know any history about his family, bringing him up to be tough-minded, have a strong mentality, but also the way he played at Alabama, playing for Nick Saban, playing in a college where if you're not good enough, you won't play. So Tua is no stranger to trying to decide and determine what's best for the team. And when he comes back, when he's reinserted as the starting quarterback, I don't expect him to have a ebb and flow up and down. I expect him to be a consistently good football player moving forward. But his mentality is strong. The Dolphins, Miami, all of your faithful and fans understand that this kid's makeup has prepared him to go through this particular situation that he's in. Now he'll be fine when he comes out on the other end of it.
Yeah, he's unshakable, and he's somebody that I think, too, is just very thankful to be able to play football at the level that he's able to play right now, considering his injury history. Let's get to another huge game this week, this one in the NFC West, and maybe a bounce-back opportunity for either Kyler Murray or Jared Goff. Both of these quarterbacks have struggled. We heard Sean McVay challenging Jared Goff to be better, take care of the football better, and some have wondered, are people figuring out this Cardinals offense and what Kyler Murray can do, finding ways to limit him, specifically really good defensive minds against the Cardinals, seemingly have them figured out. Now, that didn't stop me from picking the Cardinals, but I'm the only one here doing it. So if I'm wrong, then we'll forget this ever happened. But Marcus, Ryan, and Mina all on the Rams. So let's begin with you, Marcus, here. What do the Rams need out of Goff this week?
To be consistent, like to play above average when things aren't going as scripted. My biggest concern, and we've been in text chats about Jared Goff and we're trying to figure out, like, who is this dude? And the fact that we're trying to figure out who this dude is the problem. Jared Goff needs to have a consistency in play when Sean McVay isn't dialing up the best plays for him to run, when people aren't running wide open, when the jet sweep motion is not fooling defenders to vacate areas for him to throw the football in. He needs to have an improvisational skill to his game. He needs to be able to go off schedule, off kilter, and continue to make plays and even bail Sean McVay out at times when he's not at his best calling plays and trying to diagram and get defenses in a bad way. I don't trust Jared Goff yet, y'all. I have not seen Jared Goff play at a consistent level enough when things aren't going perfectly right for him to have success and for this team to be where they need to go. That's where I am with it, Els. And that's me. I know other people think Jared Goff is a really good quarterback, which I think he's really good. He's above average when he's on and everything is working in perfect unison. But when anything else obstructs that, he has a problem.
Marcus, you're absolutely right. He's streaky. He's coming off of his worst game of the season. But I'll add Kyler Murray has also struggled a bit as of late. I hate using the phrase figured out when I talk about mobile quarterbacks because it feels like people only use that to talk about dual threat quarterbacks and it's totally unfair. Yeah. But I will say defenses have done a better job of playing Kyler Murray. You're seeing similar tactics employed. They're forcing him to give the ball on options rather than letting him use his feet. They're blitzing him more, and he's struggled against the blitz. They're blitzing him nearly twice the rate as they did early in the season, and his QBR over the last few weeks has dropped by 30 points. I need to see, does Kyler have a counter to that? Now, I'm picking the Rams in this game. It's not because of Jared Goff. It's not because of Kyler Murray. It's because the Rams defense is the best unit on the field. They have the most talented players. You heard how I feel about Aaron Donald, and I think they're the reason the Rams win this game.
Yeah, Ryan, it was just a couple weeks ago that we had the Hail Murray play, and the Cardinals are the talk of the town. What's been the difference during their losing streak, though?
We're not seeing those athletic feats. We're not seeing Kyler Murray one-on-one in the open field with safeties and him hesitating and juking them and getting to the pylon. Or we're not seeing DeAndre Hopkins make these amazing plays. Cliff Kingsbury is not a dude. Mina called him like an 80-year-old coach a few weeks ago because Cliff Kingsbury is not going to really veer off the path of what he knows. He's going to be an air raid coach. He's going to expect those things to work. He doesn't have an adjustment off of that. So now that they're making Kyler give the ball up, now that they're stringing him out toward the sideline, understanding how to roll coverage to DeAndre Hopkins. What's going to be the adjustment? Where does Cliff Kingsbury and this offense go from there? Because if they're not making these athletic plays that other players can't make, then they're in trouble. We'll see what he has, what he can cook up this weekend.
Both of you all make great points. And, Els, you remember when Kyler was coming out of college, this was my particular concern, yeah. Right? We've seen so many quarterbacks with the athletic ability and come in the league and set it on fire. Look at Lamar Jackson. We can't help but add him into this. Like, at some point, teams are going to force you to beat them from the pocket. Like, I can't say it enough. And I know that it's not popular anymore, but at some point you're going to have to operate from the pocket to win games, and Kyler has to do that because teams are playing them that way.
We've told you it's V-Week here at ESPN. We shared Stuart Scott's great SB speech earlier in the show. Mark, it's time for one more thing before we go.
Yeah, I was thinking about it, and obviously people have known Stuart Scott longer than I have, but I want to say this because it's something that I've thought about 1,000 times when we've talked about Stuart Scott. We come on this show, NFL Live, and we have a good time. We laugh. We throw out cool cliches and movies. That's because of Stuart Scott. When I was watching TV before I entered into television, Stuart Scott was the dude I looked to and who resonated with me, being a black man, understanding that I could do this job and be cool and maybe have a little bit of a Southern twang and do things differently. He gave freedom to everybody in television to be themselves, to have a good time, and to make sure that the people were watching felt like they were a part of what we were doing. So we hope that we are representing what Stuart Scott showed me and a lot of others about what we do on television. RIP to the OG Stu Scott.
What if in 2024 you got a little bit better every day? When you're learning a new language with Babbel, that's exactly what you're doing. And if Babbel can help you start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks, imagine what you could do in a full year. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Try Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 200 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. It's designed by real people for real conversations. Babbel's tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. They have over 16 million subscriptions sold. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 award-winning language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 60% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/tackle. Get 60% off at babbel.com/tackle. Spelled B-A-B-B-E-L.com/tackle. Rules and restrictions may apply.